Energy Stew with Peter Roth, Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And this show is another one of the shows about helping you get your act together, helping us all get our act together. And to do that, I'm going to be interviewing the author of a great book called Taming Your Inner Tyrant, A Path to Healing Through Dialogues with Oneself. And to help us look at her book, is the author in studio, happily, is Patty DeLosa. Patty, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
Good, thank you. And I really enjoyed reading your book because it was so helpful to look at myself through your journey. This book is a fascinating read because you really take people through the journey of your life and the torments and the shortcomings that you were feeling along the way, and how you started to work with them through your inner dialogues, which are fascinating to see and very helpful, very helpful.
Well, you know, it was difficult to find that thin line between my story of my life, which maybe nobody wants to hear.
Life is fascinating.
and this inner life that is, some people live a deep inner life and others live more outside. And how can you find the way to be in the world and to listen to your inner life at the same time?
I think it comes out of necessity.
Exactly.
How much pain can you deal with, and when do you have to start facing it?
It's exactly what happened to me, because I had left my marriage. I'd been married to a Peruvian. I'd come back with my kids to New York. Tremendous guilt because I had broken up the marriage, and finding a job, feeding the kids the right food, and being the good mother or the best mother in the world. As you said, I'm a perfectionist.
So, as you said in the book.
And as I said in the book, yeah. So it was a physical and emotional pain situation in which I turned to Carl Jung's active imagination idea, his meditative experiment with making contact with your unconscious. And it was simply because I was in pain and I had to say, who is this tyrannical judge who is constantly on my case, criticizing me, telling me I'm stupid or I'm not doing it right? And it seemed very connected with the pain I was feeling.
But what's interesting is that you started to ask questions of yourself, and even profound questions of your inner nature of yourself. And a lot of people don't think of doing that. If anything, they might think they should go to therapy and let the therapist do it for them. Mm-hmm. And this is part of reading this was watching the mechanics of how you did this, how you actually were able to inquire within and get answers.
Well, one of the problems is, and it was certainly true of me, that one takes this inner judgmental voice as the voice of one's conscience. I should be doing what the inner judge is telling me to do.
Right.
And so it was a huge step to say, who are you and why are you attacking me all the time?
And what's fascinating in the book is that as soon as you started doing that, you started getting even more attacked by these inner judges who said, listen to us, we will make you perfect.
right. Absolutely. And in some of the conversations, they were saying, look, you just move aside and leave everything to me.
Well, that's true, too. They wanted to control you.
Exactly.
And for most of us, they do control us.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us are unconscious of our unconscious.
That's why it's called the unconscious.
Right, but we're unconscious of our unconscious that is actually controlling things.
You know, there's a wonderful story about Jung, a lady. You know, there are a lot of middle-aged ladies who come to Jung to solve their problems, and one of them at one of his lectures called out a question about, I don't feel it. How do I get in contact with my unconscious? And he replied, Madam, if the unconscious isn't bothering you, don't bother it.
Well, see, what happened was that you started bothering it.
Well, it bothered me first.
Well, and then you bothered it back, and it rose up against you in many ways.
Yes, this was, I mean, it wasn't like once I said, okay, everything was lovely, hunky-dory. It got worse and worse as... I think once you open a door, and it really felt like I was opening Pandora's box, the dreams get into nightmares, all kinds of things happen. Murderers were coming after me, tyrants, of course. There was always a tyrant of a police state keeping an eye on me with spies.
It's amazing and how your dreams could reveal that.
Yeah.
And what's so interesting is that what you were tapping into were the unconscious patterns of your fears that needed to control life.
Right.
As tyrants, and as, you know, you had many different roles that you that they revealed themselves as.
Absolutely. And one of the things that was so revealing to me was that Mrs. Rigid, who I just thought of as this controlling woman, it took me a year or two to see that she controlled because she was afraid of having free time that she didn't know what to do with, of having everything get out of her control. So it was fear that was driving her.
Right, a need for inner control.
Yeah.
And so a lot of our inner tyrant is based on what will happen if we're not in charge.
Right, exactly.
And perfect.
And perfect. Well, yeah. Where does, now that's a question, though. Where does the perfectionism come from? It has to come from something that we were trained into, I think, from parents or teachers or even the atmosphere of our society, which insists that you be perfect.
Right.
I'm not really clear yet. It's a huge question.
Well, I've done shows on our survival mechanism and how everything in our lives is learned so that we can survive.
Mm.
Our eating habits, just our sleeping habits, our happy habits are also there to assure us that we're surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And once we understand that, then we can blow the cover on our patterns because we see them as survival. And somehow, somewhere, we have to find an inner strength that says, I'm okay anyway.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Because, and where is that going to come from but somewhere inside that is not a kind of displaced persona in me, a fragment or a complex?
And your book is full of those displaced personas on the path to actually letting them go, or at least accepting them and letting them show both sides of themselves.
I think it's more accepting them, because I'm not sure the fragments go away, but they lose their power.
Right.
In a certain sense, because you're there with them.
Well, also the truth is exposed, that they're doing it out of their own fears, so therefore Right. They're not so powerful, because Yeah. They're fearful.
Very good point. Well, I never got to see whether the tyrant was afraid of something, but one thing that was quite extraordinary for me, it was a real shock, was there was a murderer in the chapter near the end called Woman in a Coma. There's a murderer who's shooting this woman, and she's lying on the table, and he won't let anybody call for help. She's bleeding to death. And when I turned to him, this was a dream, of course, when
right.
I turned to him and said, why did you kill her, or why did you shoot her, he, instead of being angry, I thought he was just the essence of masculine anger, which I had tasted in my childhood. And instead, he said, oh, you know, women are complaining all the time, nothing I do is right. And it was all this complaint that was coming from him, not, I want to kill every woman I see.
Uh-huh.
So that was interesting.
Well, and it was interesting because you also dialogued with a woman in the coma.
I did. And she said, that guy is just, if I get up, I asked her, why don't you get up off the table and tell him how you feel? And he said, she said, he'll just hit me. He'll just beat me up.
Right.
So obviously there was some part in me that felt that men...
That you needed to hide out in your coma.
Yeah, right. And what I took it as, and that's why it was so important to me, is that there's a passive feminine side in me that is not standing up to the masculine. So I think every woman has to ask herself whether what it would mean to be a whole woman, a conscious woman. Marion Woodman, who is a wonderful Jungian analyst, speaks of conscious femininity, that the world today needs more of the conscious feminine.
Well, and standing up to men doesn't mean meeting them in their masculinity.
Absolutely. Very good point.
It means meeting them in their femininity.
And also to meet them as a woman, not as a competing man.
Exactly.
And competition is so natural to our world today. I mean, everybody's brought up to compete in games and school and everything, and it's really a devastating thing.
Right. There's an assumption that we have to fight with fight.
Right.
Instead of fight with
anywhere.
Understanding.
Right.
And receptivity, too.
Beautiful.
And open up the receptivity in the other person.
Beautiful. You know, you had an interview with Allman. I can't remember his first name.
Brian.
Brian Allman. And he said something that was very meaningful to me, that the negativity in us is not a wall, but a bridge. And I was so struck that by that when I heard him say it, because what it meant in terms of my book and my experience was that as I turned toward the unconscious and accepted that there were these personas and that they were part of my journey, there was a two-way street, a dialogue with the unconscious, rather than me saying, I can't stand this, I can't stand this.
Well, when I was reading the book, and you ran into your tyrants in the book, it seemed pretty overwhelming.
It was.
Because they don't give you any room. They said, you know, we're going to teach you how to be in better control and more perfect, and you just follow us. And this is that part of you that you were trying to get away from. But they wanted to keep it.
Yeah.
And it took a long time. And this is a life journey that you've been on, of these inner dialogues.
That's right. And I do have to say, this is not a quick fix to go into active imagination, which is what this is about. It's a Jungian meditative experiment, if you like, or exercise, in which you come into contact with unconscious complexes, drives, personas, kind of fragments of your personality, and you let them speak.
Well, that's the point, is that you have to be in that place of active questioning and receptive listening.
Yeah.
But in a space that you can do it.
Well, it's a threshold between... Here's a very good example from my book, Mrs. Rigid, whom I was trying to deal with because she was making my life miserable, kept controlling. Here I was on the beach and kept controlling how far I walked, when I had a cup of tea, all of this stuff. And I finally got to a point where I said, what in heaven's name is going on? Who is this? And I had been dealing for a long time with what I call the frightened child. And what happened, as I was walking along the beach, asking, how can this be, I suddenly had this psychic, emotional experience of Mrs. Rigid walking on one side of me and the frightened child on the other. And I was hand in hand with both. And this is what Jung speaks of as bringing together the tension of the opposites, standing in the tension of the opposites.
I think you have to have both in order for any one of them to exist. And yeah. It's interesting because I'm thinking of people who have OCD. And an OCD is definitely a Mrs. Rigid. And yet, what's allowing the Mrs. Rigid to win is the frightened child.
Right.
Who says, I better listen because I'm so frightened that I better do everything perfect.
True. You know, the very first time I heard of the tyrant, I was in my teens, and it was G.I. Gurdjieff, a philosopher of the first half of the 20th century, who spoke about our inner tyrant. I mentioned him in the beginning of the book. And he felt that if we can listen to both, he said we love what we hate and we hate what we love, but we don't know it. And we need to stand in the middle, stand between, and see that both of these are going on. But because of the way I live, I want to say yes to this and pay no attention to that. But that's, until, as you say, it gets painful.
That's right. And that's a survival mechanism. Loving what you hate is pure survival. Because you, as much as you hate it, those are patterns that you're unwilling to let go of because, you know, the tyrant is in control out of fear. So you were able to face your tyrants through your life, even though it took time to dismantle their power.
I had a lot of help in the sense that I had been working in the Gurdjieff teaching, for example, since I was a child, and in my teens and at college I'd studied Hinduism, Buddhism, Zen, Taoism. I became an adept of each one for a year.
I was there myself.
You know? Yes.
And I was an avid reader of Gurdjieff over the years. And never followed his teachings because they, for one thing, they were very secretive. That didn't
true.
Turn me on.
That's true.
The group called The Work seldom exposed itself.
Well, we're more open now, so you could try again if you want to.
Well, it you know, I'm not a joiner, but but I certainly am fascinated by his wisdom. He wandered around through Eurasia for decades.
That's right.
Seeking truth.
The seekers of truth. In fact, I felt that this was what had happened to me in a way. This perfectionist part of me had, I'd read his books and everything, and I had become one of his little band that went all over Asia looking for the secret of life and of the meaning of life. And so I was kind of lost in this need to appear perfect, not only to be perfect, but to appear perfect, which is something that we suffer from.
That's interesting, and that's a message to all the seekers out there, that's also a survival mechanism that controls us. If we don't seek, if we don't seek to find the right answers, we're all going to die.
Right. Well, we're all going to die whether we find the right answers or not.
But that's the survival part, is that it, you know, doesn't want to believe that.
I see.
Wants to believe there is an answer there somewhere. Maybe Gurdjieff has it. Maybe somebody else has it.
Right. And there's a guru somewhere who can tell me what to do and how to be, which isn't true, of course.
Right. They have their own problems.
That's right. Probably they have their tyrants as well.
Sure.
One of the people I met, these personas I met, was the pleaser. And we all also have a pleaser in us, some more powerful than others. So many people who are looking for somebody else to help them simply are not assuming the, in a sense, the responsibility for themselves and for their lives. I had to accept that I was this person, that I did leave my husband, that I did, as I thought, mess up my children's lives by breaking up the family. All of this I had to digest. And one of the interesting things about this whole thing was that what I was suffering from, the physical pain, was indigestion. So I couldn't digest my life.
Right. You had, and most people do find physical ailments that parallel their psyches.
True.
And so much of healing is about relaxing to life, to these tyrants, to feel the wholeness within, so that it doesn't matter what patterns we're in for survival, that we're going to be okay.
Well, one of the things, you see, one of the divisions we have is between the mind and the body. So even seekers of truth are all about being upstairs in the mind, in the spiritual, and not accepting the body has its needs and its life.
Right. And actually, the more we resist, the more it persists.
Exactly.
So if we can get out of our own way and surrender, be receptive, and aware too, because it's watching those patterns. I mean, that's why one of the insights from the book that was so powerful for me was to see through all these different personalities that showed up in your unconscious how we are controlled by so much of that in our lives, and other people too. So we look at people who are, for instance, overly pleasant. Everybody's, you know, and we see manners
nice.
And all
nice
this
guy.
Is nice. And we look at that, and then we could be stirred up by it in our own guilt that we're not pleasant enough or whatever. But then if we can see it, understand it as a controlling mechanism, a pattern that they need to control their lives with and to control us with.
It's a habit in a way.
Right.
But a deep habit.
It's very deep, and it's a survival mechanism.
Well, you know, one of the most important things the tyrant and others told me, I mean, I'm really grateful to him for this, is even when we were doing battle in the early stages, he kept saying, "You never listen." You know, why? I say, "Why do you treat me this way? Well, you never listen." And so, do we listen?
Well, what they're saying is that you don't listen enough because your survival is at stake.
Exactly.
And therefore, to control things, we have to listen even harder.
Right, right. In a tense way, rather than that relaxation you're
right.
speaking
awareness
of.
Is great.
Yeah.
But awareness with balance and with understanding of patterns and to watch them and watch them in others, too.
You're making me think of one thing that's a really important learning for me. The opposite of a power isn't weakness. The opposite of power is love.
Right, is wholeness.
Yes, it's wholeness.
Love to me is a wholeness feature.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you. The point I'm making is that when we're thinking in opposites, this tyrant and this little frightened child, the solution isn't being for the child to get stronger and fight harder. It's for, as you said, an acceptance and a relaxation away from that dynamic power that wants to crush.
Right, and yet I was realizing just now that all of these characters in your psyche, as you said earlier, they're not going to go away. It's just holding them in more balance. And if you can hold all of these inner voices, these inner personalities and patterns in receptivity and in balance, then you're whole.
Well, this is exactly what happened. They actually, over time, educated me.
Right.
And
right.
when I,
as your book does.
Yeah. And as I grew to have more of a connection with a kind of central figure, and of course I called him the Lord of the Heart.
Right.
But
right.
first,
that's
I
beautiful.
Kept getting these messages: follow another leader. Stop doing it the way you're doing. Follow another leader. Stop being tensely fighting your way through life. Follow another leader. And then it became the Lord of the Heart.
Right. So the leader is your own heart. And I also think of heart as the space of wholeness and love, of course. And so that's what's so wonderful about your book, is that it's a journey through all of this to reconcile it and to have compassion for oneself. I think compassion is a big word about your work and your willingness to share it is your compassion for yourself and others, and to allow us to see this journey so that we can embrace it in ourselves.
Well, that was a leap. It was to decide to publish it. As I wrote in that blog on booktrib.com, when I first started this, I was a mainstream journalist. I was deputy chief of reporters at Fortune magazine. There was no way I would have ever said anything to anybody, even about my spiritual journey, much less about here I am talking to my unconscious.
Right. And you were in a competitive mode at that point.
Absolutely.
So you needed to manage your reality so that you couldn't diminish your need to earn an income.
And look good.
Yeah,
I had to look good.
In order to maintain your income.
Right.
So there was survival in that.
You bet.
And now you're at a stage in your life that, and we do get there eventually, where we're not holding on to our competitive needs as much and allowing ourselves to be more true to ourselves.
Marion Woodman had something lovely to say. She said, when you become a crone, you no longer have the world's power in your hands, but the power you have is to tell the truth to everyone, and every crone should tell the truth, whether they like it or not.
I love that. That's so beautiful. And you certainly represent that in the book. Taming Your Inner Tyrant is so beautifully written because it is so honest. Mm. You know, there is truth of you, of your journey throughout it. And it's a lot of help in here because not only is it your inner dialogues, but at the end of each chapter, there are so many helpful paragraphs of how to do a better job.
Well, I'm hoping people will take a notebook along with the book and take time after every chapter to try a few of the exercises that I suggest, because it can lead them to more opening. Obviously, people are going to buy the book because they want to learn how to open more.
Right. As I read it, there was so much self-reflection that I felt within myself.
Hmm.
And I don't know if I could find these particular personalities in myself that easily because I have, you know, my own inner dialogues, but probably very parallel.
And they can be different for different
course,
people. Yeah.
Of course. And so we all can inquire within. And that's what you were doing. And we said that earlier, if we can ask the questions of ourselves and be receptive enough, then we can open up this dialogue.
Wonderful, yes.
And so we only have a few minutes left, Patty. How can people locate you, ask you questions?
Well, I actually have a website, tamingyourinnertyrant.com, and the book certainly is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And I'm very happy, if you go on my website, you can email me from there. I'm very happy to have dialogues with real people who are on their journey and be useful to them. I give workshops sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And on my website, there's a schedule of that. And, of course, I've written an earlier book. This is my second book, called The Practice of Presence, Five Paths to Daily Life. And there you'll find something about the Gurdjieff teaching, which
I mentioned. Thinking that of Gurdjieff as you said that,
mm-hmm.
Because Gurdjieff is always about being present.
Right, and it was such a powerful influence on my life, has always been. And then Tai Chi and Taoism I went into very deeply. I do Tai Chi every day. Coming over here, I did Tai Chi in the park. That gives me strength, you know, the strength of the trees and the natural life.
I was introduced to you through Herb Cohen, who he and I were very interested in Tai Chi together about 40-some-odd years ago.
Wow.
So I'm glad that he told me about you and showed me the book. And I'm really happy that you were able to come on the show. And thank you so much for doing the book, for being out there and in a powerful way.
Well, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to talk about it with you.
Sure, my pleasure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. And I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. And thank you so much for listening.